All right, let's unpack this.
Okay.
We've got a fascinating stack of political theory for you today.
Right.
Pulled from a book called The Machiavellians by James Burnham.
Oh, yeah.
Now, before you switch over thinking it's going to be a snooze fest.
Sure.
Let me assure you.
Yeah.
We're after practical knowledge.
Absolutely.
The kind that can help us understand power dynamics right here in our own communities of Deer Park, LaPorte, and Pasadena.
Yeah, well, it's fascinating how Burnham brings together these thinkers, Machiavelli himself, Mosca, Sorel, and Pareto.
Right.
They might have lived in different eras, but they all reached surprisingly similar conclusions about how power actually works.
Yeah.
Often challenging our idealistic notions.
It's like they had this X-ray vision for seeing through the smoke and mirrors of politics, right?
Absolutely.
And that's what we need here in our local communities, to be able to cut through this spin and understand what's really going on.
That's exactly right.
Mm.
Burnham calls out what he refers to as the typical method of political thought.
Okay.
And it's something we see all the time, especially during election season.
Oh, yeah. I think we all know that feeling of being sold something rather than having a genuine conversation about the issues.
Right.
What is it about this typical approach that Burnham finds so problematic?
He argues that instead of starting with facts and evidence,
most
political thought starts with a predetermined conclusion.
Right.
A utopia.
Oh.
A moral principle.
Mm-hmm.
A religious belief.
Okay.
And then cherry picks evidence to support it.
Oh, so it's like,
it's less about seeking truth and more about justifying existing biases.
So it's like working backward from the answer you want.
Exactly.
Which explains why those campaign promises rarely match reality once someone's elected.
Right.
It makes you wonder if anyone in local politics has ever actually balanced a budget after promising to do so.
That's right.
You know,
and that's where Machiavelli's approach is so different and, frankly, so useful.
Okay.
He throws out the abstract moralizing and just observes how successful leaders actually behave.
Mm-hmm.
He's not advocating for being evil, but he's saying,
right,
look, this is how the game is played, whether we like it or not.
Okay, so we need to drop the naive should and get real about the S's.
Exactly.
But how does this Machiavellian lens help us navigate the power dynamics in our own neighborhoods?
Yeah.
Like, say, getting a new park built in Deer Park.
Oh, let's say you're passionate about building this park.
Okay.
Machiavelli would tell you to forget about flowery speeches about community benefits.
Okay.
Instead, figure out who the key decision makers are, city council members,
right,
parks department officials, influential community groups.
Okay.
Then analyze their interests.
Right.
Do they care about re-election?
Right.
Public image. Budgets. Only then can you tailor your arguments to resonate with what they truly value.
So it's not enough to have a great idea. You have to understand the power structure and speak their language.
Yeah. Right.
It's about strategic persuasion, not just heartfelt pleas.
Exactly. And this is where Mosca's work on the iron law of oligarchy comes in.
Okay.
He presents this tough reality that even in systems with voting, a small group inevitably ends up controlling things.
Okay. Iron law of oligarchy sounds a bit ominous.
Yeah.
Break that down for us.
Okay.
I mean, we elect our city council here in Pasadena.
Sure.
So how does this apply?
Think about it.
Okay.
Even with elected officials, there's a limited number of them making decisions for a large population.
Right.
They control access to information, have established networks.
Yeah.
And let's face it, most people don't have the time or energy to constantly scrutinize every decision.
Right.
This naturally leads to power concentrating in the hands of a few.
That's true.
Yeah.
Even though we have the power to vote them out, once they're in office, it often feels like they're calling the shots.
Right.
So it's not necessarily a conspiracy,
right,
but just the way things tend to work, regardless of good intentions.
Right.
Yeah.
And understanding this dynamic, recognizing that this concentration of power is almost inevitable in any large group, helps us be more effective citizens.
Yeah.
We can hold our elected officials accountable more effectively when we understand the system they're operating within.
So it's not about being cynical.
Right.
It's about being informed and realistic.
Exactly.
This is definitely making me rethink how I approach local politics.
It's about recognizing the patterns and using that knowledge to participate more strategically.
Okay, so we've got Machiavelli telling us to focus on the reality of power dynamics, and Mosca showing us how power tends to concentrate.
Right.
Where do we go from there?
Well, next we need to explore how leaders maintain their power.
Right.
And that's where Sorrell's work on myth becomes incredibly relevant.
Right.
He argued that powerful social movements are often fueled by grand ideas, even if those ideas aren't completely true.
That makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
Think about slogans like Make America Great Again.
Right.
Or even local campaigns centered around revitalizing downtown.
Yeah.
They're not concrete plans, but these powerful narratives that tap into people's emotions and aspirations.
Exactly. All and right. the Machiavellian twist here is that leaders often use these myths, consciously or not, to gain and hold power.
Mm.
Whether they genuinely believe in them becomes almost secondary to their effectiveness in mobilizing support.
So it's like a tool, a way of shaping public perception and influencing behavior.
Exactly.
And with the rise of social media.
Right.
It seems like these myths spread even faster and wider.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Understanding how these myths work is crucial.
Mm-hmm.
Especially at the local level.
Yeah.
It helps us decipher the messaging we're bombarded with.
Right.
From politicians and community leaders.
Okay.
And make more informed decisions.
So before we get swept up in the next Save Our Schools campaign.
Yeah.
We need to ask ourselves, what's the myth here?
Right.
What's the underlying message? And is it truly aligned with the facts and my own values?
Precisely. And this leads us to Pareto.
Okay.
Who delves even deeper into human motivation.
Mm-hmm.
He argued that much of what we consider logical action is actually driven by subconscious instincts he called residues.
Residues.
Yes.
Okay, I'm all ears.
All right.
What exactly are those?
Well,
and how do they play into local politics?
Imagine you're at a city council meeting about a proposed development project.
Okay.
You might think you're carefully weighing the pros and cons.
Mm-hmm.
But Pareto would say, look closer.
Okay.
Are you swayed by your inherent desire for social conformity? Everyone else seems to support it.
Right.
Or maybe you're driven by a residue of group preservation.
Okay.
This project promises new jobs for people in your community.
You're saying that even when we think we're being totally rational, there are these underlying forces shaping our perceptions and decisions.
Exactly.
Wow.
And these residues aren't necessarily bad.
Okay.
But being aware of them in ourselves and in others is crucial.
Mm-hmm.
They explain why people vote the way they do.
Right.
Why certain policies gain traction.
Yeah.
Why conflicts erupt.
So it's like having this secret decoder ring for human behavior. Fascinating.
Yes.
And I imagine incredibly useful when trying to navigate local politics or community initiatives.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Recognizing these residues can help us craft more effective messages,
okay.
build stronger coalitions,
mm-hmm.
and anticipate potential points of resistance.
Yeah.
It's about understanding the deeper currents that drive our actions,
right.
both individually and collectively.
This is all incredibly insightful.
Good.
But I have to ask, how does this all play out in a real world scenario?
Mm-hmm.
Can you give us a concrete example of how someone might use these ideas to, say, get that park built in their neighborhood?
Absolutely.
Like,
let's take that park example
right.
and apply these Machiavellian principles step by step.
Right.
First, let's revisit Machiavelli's focus on the is rather than the should.
Okay, so instead of dreaming about swing sets and picnic tables,
mm-hmm.
we need to get down to the nitty-gritty of local politics.
Right.
Okay.
You need to analyze the existing power dynamics.
Okay.
Who are the key decision makers?
Right.
What are their interests?
Mm.
Is the mayor facing re-election?
Okay.
Is there a budget surplus or shortfall this year?
Right.
What other projects are competing for resources?
Mm-hmm.
Gather the facts on the ground before you even draft that petition.
So it's like doing a SWOT analysis, but for local politics.
Exactly.
You need to identify the strengths, weaknesses, opportunities, and threats within the specific context of your community.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Only then can you formulate a strategy that's actually realistic and achievable.
Okay.
Now let's add Mosca's theory of the ruling class into the mix.
Okay. So we need to figure out who's really calling the shots, even if they're not the ones out front.
Right.
Okay.
Identify the influencers, both official and unofficial.
Okay. Yeah.
Is there a particular city council member known for championing parks and recreation?
Right.
Is there a powerful homeowners association that might support or oppose the project?
Mm-hmm.
Map out those power relationships and figure out how you can leverage them to your advantage.
So it's not just about presenting a compelling case to the city council.
Right.
It's about knowing who has their ear and how to get on their good side.
Mm-hmm.
It's a game of influence and relationships.
Precisely.
Okay.
Now, remember, Sorel's insights about the power of myth.
Yes.
You need to craft a narrative that resonates with the people in power.
Okay.
And the community as a whole.
So instead of just talking about the benefits of a park,
yeah,
we need to create a story that captures people's imaginations.
Exactly.
Right.
Maybe your park can be framed as a symbol of community revitalization.
Okay.
A safe haven for children. Or even a boost to local property values.
Right.
Tap into those deeply held beliefs and aspirations.
Right.
To build broader support for your project.
It's about making it about more than just a park.
All right.
It's about connecting it to a larger narrative that people can buy into.
And don't forget Pareto's residues.
Okay.
Think about the subconscious motivations of those decision makers. Mm-hmm. Are they driven by a desire for social approval?
Yeah.
A sense of legacy?
Okay.
Economic gain?
Right.
Understanding those deeper drivers can help you tailor your message and your approach.
So it's like having a cheat sheet for human psychology.
Exactly.
You can anticipate objections, play to people's strengths, and even neutralize potential opponents by understanding what makes them tick.
Exactly. By weaving together these Machiavellian insights.
Yeah.
You can move from simply having a good idea to creating a strategic, persuasive, and ultimately successful campaign for that new park.
This is truly empowering.
Mm-hmm.
It means that even if we don't hold official positions of power, we can still exert influence and create change within our communities.
That's right.
We just need to understand the rules of the game.
That's the key takeaway here.
Yeah.
The Machiavellians aren't advocating for manipulation or cynicism.
Right.
They're providing us with a framework for understanding and navigating the realities of power.
This has been a fascinating deep dive.
Good.
And I feel like we've just scratched the surface of these Machiavellian ideas.
We certainly have, but hopefully we've given our listener a lot to chew on.
Absolutely.
So before we move on from this idea of power dynamics, there's another concept we need to discuss.
Okay.
It's what Mosca called the political formula.
Okay. Political formula.
Yeah.
I'm intrigued. What is that?
Think of it this way.
Huh?
It's the story that the ruling class tells to justify its power.
Okay.
It's the narrative that legitimizes their authority.
Oh.
And makes people accept their rule.
So it's like a PR campaign for the people in charge.
Yeah, you could say that.
A way to make their power seem natural.
Right.
Or even inevitable.
Exactly.
You know?
And Mosca argued that every ruling class needs a political formula.
Okay.
To maintain its grip on power.
Okay.
In the past, these formulas were often based on things like divine. Right.
Okay.
The idea that kings and queens were chosen by God to rule.
Right.
Or inherited privilege and the belief that certain families were just destined to be in charge.
Right. But what about today?
Yeah.
What's the political formula in a modern democracy like ours here in the U.S.?
Well,
I mean, we don't have kings and queens anymore.
Right.
At least not officially.
Mosca would argue that the political formula in a modern democracy is the idea of the will of the people.
Right, because in theory, our elected officials are supposed to represent the desires and interests of the people who voted for them.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah.
But Mosca's point is that even in a democracy, the ruling class, the elected officials, the bureaucrats, the lobbyists, the influencers, they still wield a considerable amount of power.
Yeah.
And they use the formula of the will of the people to justify their decisions, even if those decisions don't always align with what the majority actually wants.
So it's like a way of masking their power behind this veil of popular consent.
Precisely.
They can claim they're acting on our behalf.
Right.
Even if they're not.
Exactly. And that's why it's so important to be aware of this concept of the political formula.
Okay.
It helps us to see through the rhetoric of those in power and understand how decisions are really being made.
Okay, so we've got to be critical thinkers.
Yes.
To question the narratives we're being told.
Right.
And look at who's really benefiting from those stories.
Exactly.
It's easy to get swept up in the idea that our elected officials always have our best interests at heart.
Right.
But Mosca is reminding us to be a bit more skeptical, you know.
And this kind of critical thinking is especially important at the local level.
Okay.
Where the political landscape can be even more complex and opaque.
Right.
We might feel like we know our city council members or school board trustees.
Mm-hmm.
but we still need to be aware of the forces that shape their decisions
okay.
and the narratives they use to justify those decisions.
This is all pretty heavy stuff.
It is.
But I think it's really important for us to be having these conversations.
I agree.
Especially here on Think and Act Locally.
Yeah.
We're all about empowering residents to make informed decisions.
Absolutely.
And engage effectively in their communities.
That's right.
So where do we go from here?
Mm-hmm.
Who's the next Machiavellian thinker we need to explore?
Well, no discussion of the Machiavellians would be complete without delving into the work of Vilfredo Pareto, one of the most brilliant and, yes, controversial social scientists of the 20th century.
Okay, Pareto, lay it on us.
All right.
How does he fit into this Machiavellian tradition?
Pareto took the ideas of Machiavelli,
okay,
Mosca, and Sorel, and developed an even more comprehensive theory of how societies function.
Right.
His key insight was that
yeah.
a lot of human behavior isn't actually driven by logic or reason,
okay.
but by what he called non-logical conduct.
Non-logical conduct.
Yeah.
So we're not as rational as we like to think we are.
That was Pareto's argument.
Okay.
He believed that our actions are often driven by emotions,
okay.
instincts, and subconscious desires,
right.
things we're not always aware of. And he called these underlying motivations residues.
Okay, so those residues are like the hidden forces that shape our behavior.
Yeah.
And how do they play into politics?
Well,
especially at the local level.
Imagine you're attending a city council meeting here in La Porte.
Okay.
And they're debating whether to increase property taxes to fund a new school.
Okay.
You might think you're carefully weighing financial implications
yeah.
against the educational benefits, but Pareto would say,
oh,
look closer.
You mean look closer at my own motivation?
Exactly. Uh-huh. Are you subconsciously swayed by a desire for social conformity?
Okay.
Maybe most of your neighbors are in favor of the tax increase and you don't want to be the odd one out. Or perhaps you're driven by a residue of what he called group persistence.
Okay.
A deep-seated instinct to protect and preserve your community.
Right.
Even if it means making personal sacrifices.
So these residues are like these underlying emotional or instinctual drives.
Right.
That can cloud our judgment.
Yes.
Even when we think we're being completely rational.
Precisely.
Okay.
And understanding these residues is key to understanding why people vote the way they do.
Right.
Why certain policies gain traction.
Mm-hmm.
Why community conflicts arise.
Okay.
It's like having a secret decoder ring for human behavior.
And this applies not just to individual citizens, but also to the politicians and leaders themselves, right?
Absolutely. They're just as susceptible to these residues as anyone else.
Okay.
Recognizing this can help us to predict their actions, anticipate their arguments,
right.
and craft more effective strategies for engaging with them.
Okay. So Pareto's adding another layer of complexity to this whole idea of understanding power dynamics.
Yeah.
It's not just about the formal structures of government or the strategies of political campaigns.
Right.
It's about recognizing the deeper psychological forces at play.
Right.
You know?
And this leads us to one of Pareto's most intriguing
okay.
and controversial ideas.
Okay.
The circulation of elites.
Circulation of elites. Okay, now I'm really curious.
Yeah.
What's that all about?
Pareto observed that the composition of ruling classes,
okay.
those who hold power in society, changes over time.
Okay.
New groups rise to power while old groups decline.
Right.
He saw this as a cyclical process,
oh,
a constant ebb and flow of power.
So it's like the old saying, the only constant is change,
yeah.
even when it comes to who's in charge.
Exactly.
Okay.
And Pareto argued that this circulation of elites
okay.
was actually essential for the health of a society.
Right.
New blood,
mm-hmm.
new ideas, yeah. new approaches, all of this prevents stagnation
okay.
and keeps things moving forward.
I can see how that makes sense.
Yeah.
If the same people are in power for too long, they might become complacent,
right.
out of touch with the needs of the community,
mm-hmm.
or resistant to new ideas.
Precisely.
You know.
But Pareto went even further.
Okay.
Identifying two main types of elites.
Okay.
Which he called, and this might sound a bit strange, lions and foxes.
Lions and foxes. This sounds like something out of Aesop's fables. Okay, I'm all ears.
All right.
What's the difference between a lion elite and a fox elite?
Well, just like in those fables,
okay.
Pareto's lions represent the strong,
okay.
decisive, action-oriented leaders.
All right.
They're the ones who are willing to use force, whether that's military power,
mm-hmm.
economic pressure,
okay.
or even just sheer force of personality.
Okay.
to achieve their goals.
Mm-hmm.
Think of the classic image of a bold, charismatic leader,
Okay.
someone who commands respect and isn't afraid to take risks.
Okay, so the lions are the bold, decisive types,
Right.
the ones who are willing to shake things up.
Yeah.
What about the foxes?
Pareto's foxes are the cunning,
Okay.
adaptable,
Mm-hmm.
and yes, sometimes manipulative leaders,
Okay.
they rely more on persuasion,
Okay.
diplomacy, strategy,
Okay.
and even a bit of deception
Okay.
to achieve their aims.
Okay.
They're more subtle and nuanced in their approach, often working behind the scenes to influence events.
Okay.
Think of the clever strategist,
Okay.
the skilled negotiator,
Right.
the master of public relations.
So we've got the lions,
Yeah.
the bold and forceful leaders,
Right.
and the foxes, the cunning and strategic ones.
Yeah.
And Pareto is saying that a healthy society needs a balance of both, right?
That's his
Too
heart.
many lions and you get tyranny and oppression.
Right.
Too many foxes and you get corruption and stagnation.
Exactly.
Okay.
It's about finding the right balance,
Right.
recognizing that each type of elite has its strengths and weaknesses.
Okay.
And this applies not just at the national level,
Right.
but also right here in our local communities.
So when we're thinking about our city council members,
Yeah.
our school board trustees,
Right.
even the leaders of our neighborhood associations, we can ask ourselves,
Yeah.
are they more lion-like or fox-like in their approach? And are
Exactly.
those approaches serving the community well,
Right.
or is there an imbalance that needs to be addressed?
Those are exactly the kinds of questions we should be asking.
Right.
And that's the real beauty of the Machiavellian tradition. It
Okay.
gives us tools to analyze power dynamics, understand human behavior, and ultimately become more effective participants in the political process, whether that's
Yes.
at the national level or right here in our own
This
backyards.
is all incredibly fascinating.
Good.
But I'm sure our listeners are wondering, how do we apply these ideas in our own lives?
Right.
We're not all aspiring politicians or community leaders,
That's true.
right?
But these Machiavellian principles are relevant to anyone who
Okay.
wants to understand and influence the world around them.
Okay.
Whether you're trying to get a new stop sign installed on your street,
Okay.
advocating for a new program at your child's school, or even just navigating a conflict with your neighbor,
Right.
understanding how power dynamics work can make all the difference.
So it's not just about grand political schemes.
Right.
It's about understanding how power operates in all aspects of our lives, even
Exactly.
the seemingly mundane ones.
And that's what we'll explore in more detail next time.
Go ahead.
When we apply these Machiavellian insights to specific scenarios right here in Deer Park, LaPorte, and Pasadena.
All right. Sounds good. So we're back, and we've been digging into all these Machiavellian ideas about power and how it works.
Right, and how those ideas
You know, it's
can
interesting.
apply in unexpected places.
It makes you think,
Yeah.
like, how would Machiavelli himself approach local issues here in our area? Like, you know,
Well,
getting a new crosswalk installed near a school in Pasadena or something like that.
it's a great question because Machiavelli was all about practical results.
Right.
He'd probably tell you to forget about just writing letters to the editor or complaining on social media. He'd say, you got to think strategically.
So, like, how do you actually get things done? Not
Exactly.
just complain about how they should be.
First, you got to figure out who really holds the power in that situation.
Okay, so, like, is it the city council or the school board or the traffic department
Could
or.
be any of those.
Okay.
And then who influences them?
Right. Because sometimes it's not the people with the official titles who are really calling the shots. Yeah, it can be complicated.
Mosca would remind us about the iron law of oligarchy, remember?
Oh, right. That even in a democracy, there's always a smaller group who ends up wielding most of the power.
Exactly.
Okay, so you got to map out that power
You
structure.
got it.
All right, then what?
Then you got to channel your inner Sorrel.
Okay, the myth guy.
Yep. Craft a compelling narrative.
So not just like, we need a crosswalk because it's dangerous.
No, that's not going to cut it.
Okay.
You got to tap into people's emotions.
Right.
Make it about safety for kids, about community well-being, about making our streets more walkable and vibrant.
Oh, I see. So you're framing it within a larger story.
Exactly. A story that resonates with people's
And
values.
that's how you mobilize them to support your cause.
And don't forget about Pareto.
Oh, right. The residues.
Think about what drives those decision makers.
Okay.
Are they motivated by a desire for social approval? do they prioritize saving money?
Oh, so you tailor your approach based on what makes them tick.
Exactly.
This is really fascinating stuff.
It is, isn't it? And it shows that you don't have to be a politician to be effective.
Right. You just need to understand the game.
And play it strategically.
And ethically, of course.
Of course.
We're not advocating for manipulation here.
No, it's about understanding the tools of power and using them for good.
For the benefit of our community.
Exactly.
This has been a really great deep dive.
I agree.
I feel like I have a whole new perspective on how things work.
That's what we hope for.
And how I can actually make a difference.
That's the goal.
You know, even just in my own neighborhood.
But whether it's a crosswalk or a new park.
Right. Or anything, really.
It all comes down to understanding power.
And how to use it effectively.
And responsibly.
Absolutely.
So to all our listeners out there in Deer Park, LaPorte, and Pasadena.
Yeah, to everyone in our community.
Remember, you have the power to make a difference.
And we hope this deep dive has given you some tools to do just that.
If you found value in our show today, please consider supporting us at thinkandactlocally.com/donate.
You can find the link in the show notes.
Your contribution helps us continue bringing you these deep dives.
And helps us empower our community.
Thanks for joining us on this Machiavellian journey.
And remember
to think and act locally.